Case number 72805, Pasquale McMurray versus State. Ms. Lucy's for the district attorney, Mr. Brown for the appellant. Do you want to reserve some time? You have 15 minutes total.
3 minutes, please.
3 minutes. I'll keep an eye on the clock. Mr. Brown, go ahead.
Thank you very much. William Brown, on behalf of Appellant Pasquale McMurray, it's truly an honor to be here before this panel to talk about a case that is both so important and so unique. This case is important because it involves precursor duty to a prosecutor's duty to disclose favorable evidence. That duty, of course, is the duty to learn of favorable evidence in the first place. Logically, a prosecutor is not going to disclose Brady material he or she is unaware of. The duty of inquiry, therefore, is an essential catalyst to trigger the state's duty to disclose evidence that is favorable to the defense. The kind of disclosure that guarantees that a defendant has the kind of fair trial that the U.S. Constitution guarantees. When a prosecutor is excused from learning of favorable evidence, that duty necessarily falls on law enforcement. When the prosecutor is not asking law enforcement and making appropriate inquiries about whether law enforcement possesses Brady material, it is up to the individual police officers and the detectives, presumably, to number one, identify in their records what constitutes Brady material, and number two, to disclose that to the state. So what happens is by removing the prosecutor's duty of inquiry, that duty necessarily falls on law enforcement. Now, the Constitution and Supreme Court precedent places on the courts and the prosecutors the duty of ensuring that a defendant has a fundamentally fair trial, at least with respect to Brady material. So when that duty is placed on police officers and law enforcement then becomes the arbiter of a defendant's right to a fundamentally fair trial. That was the concern that the Kyles Court voiced. It said, when you remove the prosecutor's duty of inquiry, you necessarily shift it to law enforcement and away from the government. Because of the unique nature of a duty of inquiry and how it necessarily precedes this duty of disclosure, this case is tremendously important. It's also unique. It's unique in at least, I would say, three respects. Number one, it's unique in how boldly the state in this case announced that it would not comply with its duty of inquiry. I have spent hours and hours researching this issue. I have never come across a case where a prosecutor has simply said, we will not comply with our duty of inquiry under Kyles. To my knowledge, there is no opinion, published or otherwise, reciting that factual scenario. So this case is unique in that respect. It's unique as well in the way that the district court's ruling, which endorses this notion that the state has no affirmative duty of inquiry, is so plainly contrary to clear U.S. Supreme Court precedent. Three cases, Bagley, Strickler, and Kyles, say collectively this: a prosecutor has a duty to assist the defense in making its case by, among other things, learning of Brady material in law enforcement possession. That is clearly what those three cases hold. This court's ruling, in the court's words, was that the state is not required to look inward. It's not required to look within for Brady material. I think it's a rare situation where a trial court's ruling is so plainly contradictory to controlling Supreme Court precedent.
Could you be specific as to what Brady material you sought out, and also what you did to try to obtain that material, either from the district attorney's office or from Metro?
Sure. The Brady defense motion asked for, as relevant here, two categories of Brady material. Not two categories of Brady material. There was a request that said, Judge, we would like you to order the state, pursuant to Kyles, to inquire of Metro and see if Metro possesses any exculpatory evidence. The state said, we're not going to do that, and the district court said, you don't have to. So it was not a specific category of information that was sought, but rather it was a request that the state comply with its constitutional obligation to determine whether law enforcement possessed Brady material. There was one specific request for Brady material, and that related to personnel files of law enforcement witnesses. The defense motion said, state, we would like you to review the personnel files of any of the witnesses that will be testifying and are part of the prosecution team, and we would like you to disclose any information that would bear on their credibility.
Why would that be relevant to sexual assault, battery with intent to commit sexual assault, coercion, first-degree kidnapping, battery constituting domestic violence strangulation?
I would say two things. I would say, number one, credibility is always relevant. I would say, number two, it depends on what information is within those personnel records. If there is information in personnel records, for example, that indicates that a crime scene analyst, for example, was disciplined for failing to follow proper procedures and protocols.
We have a commission that's looking into this issue. In fact, Mr. Cohn is on that commission with Chief Justice Douglas and myself. And we know there's an issue with Metro. And our district attorney, Steve Wolfson, is on that commission. Our Chris Lally, his assistant, and also Chris Hicks, who's the district attorney from Washoe County. And it's not necessarily an easy task for a district attorney to, even if there's subpoenas to the police agency, to get the material you're requesting. Bad facts make bad law. This is an important issue to me as a former defense attorney. And I'm worried that in this particular case that maybe it wasn't necessary for Ms. Lucich to ask Metro for the files of the police officers in this particular case. Tell me why it's really relevant. You started to say about the crime scene analyst, but I mean, sure. He has something specific as to any of the witnesses. I mean, this is a different type of case. You know, I don't want to screw up this commission's work. We're still in session. In fact, we'll be meeting again. We meet at the airport in Reno, and people fly up from Las Vegas. People come in from the rurals. And this is an important issue as to what obligations a district attorney like Ms. Lucich, who I've known since she started practicing as a DA, has had trials in front of me and never had a problem with discovery, as far as I know, with Ms. Lucich or the sexual assault unit, SVU in Clark County. So I want to make sure that if we're going to do something on this case favorable to your client, that it's going to be something that will survive in-bank review, in case my other colleagues want to review this issue.
I'm sorry.
I know I've given you a lot of stuff.
Yeah, what was the specific question?
Question is, why should we find in favor of you on this issue, this Brady issue? Is this really a Brady issue?
Yeah. My response would be two things. Number one, it's absolutely a Brady issue. Kyle says very plainly that a prosecutor has a duty to inquire of law enforcement to determine whether there is any exculpatory evidence. That's cut and dry. There's no dispute about that. And the state never disputes that they do, in fact, have such a duty. I mean, that's beyond dispute, which makes the statement that they weren't going to do it and the judicial blessing of that all the more problematic. So I would say, broadly speaking, this is a Brady case because it deals with the duty to inquire into whether law enforcement possesses Brady material. It's a precursor. It's a catalyst. It's something that necessarily precedes the disclosure of Brady evidence, is the discovering of it.
So if the district attorney simply says to you, yes, I inquired of Metro and there's no exculpatory evidence, does that satisfy Brady? Is that what you want us to rule in this case?
Well, I would say a number of things. I would say there's no evidence in the record that such inquiries were made. And in fact, what the record indicates is that the state said we are not going to make such inquiries. So I don't think there is a factual basis, at least in the record, for that kind of representation to be made by the state. I suppose if there were to be a post-mortem a kind of situation on this case, where the state were to go back and ask whether there were any exculpatory information in law enforcement's possession, that would be a step in the right direction.
I was going to ask you also, let's say that we find in your favor in this and say, Ms. Lucy, shame on you. You should have asked Metro whether they had exculpatory evidence. Is harmless error applicable in this situation? Is it structural error where it's automatic reversal of these convictions for sexual assault, et cetera?
Well, it's Chapman. It's harmless error. This is a preserved constitutional error. And in such a situation, the state has a burden of showing beyond a reasonable doubt that the error was harmless. What that would mean is that their failure to look for exculpatory evidence was harmless because there was no exculpatory evidence. But in this situation, they've said, we are not going to look. They cannot now be heard to say, well, there was nothing there. In other words, they can't show the absence of exculpatory evidence in places where they affirmatively told the district court they were not going to look. So, you know, it's Chapman, it's a harmless error analysis in here. And the record is such that the state is bound by its statements that it was not going to look in certain places and cannot now be heard to say, nor would the record support, the notion that there was nothing there. We don't know. I mean, that's the problem. That's why the duty of inquiry is so important, because it's the first step. It's the condition preceding to the disclosure of Brady material.
You have about 3 minutes and 50 seconds left. I want to know if you want to say, but go ahead, Justice Stevens.
Just real quick, Mr. Brown, how do you or can you harmonize Sonner versus State with Kyles and its progeny? And I know that, you know, this is a year after Kyles. It doesn't cite Kyles.
Yeah, sure. Well, Sonner v. State, two distinctions right off the bat. In Sonner v. State, the defense sought disclosure of personnel records, not a review by the DA. So right out of the gate, it's different from what the request was here. Here, defense counsel said, DA, I would like for you to review these personnel records. If there is Brady material, I would like it produced. In Sonner, they said, we just want the records. It's distinct in that way. It's factually distinct for a second reason as well. Sonner involved the killing of a highway patrolman. It was his personnel records that the defense was seeking. Not to impeach a law enforcement witness, but as described in the decision, to rebut state evidence of Borland's value as a law enforcement officer and an individual. So this was a situation in which, without any factual predicate, the defense was kind of seeking some personnel records in the hopes that there would be something in there that would suggest in some way that this law enforcement officer's life was less valuable, or the service that he provided as a law enforcement officer was less meaningful. That's clearly distinct from asking for personnel records so that you know, for example, whether a law enforcement officer who is testifying in a trial has credibility issues.
So to the extent that Sonner suggests there needed to be a better showing by the defense to get access to these materials, you'd submit on this case, it's not really applicable to our case.
Sonner clearly doesn't apply here for a number of reasons, but yeah, the defense doesn't just get, simply by requesting, all law enforcement officer personnel records.
Begs a question. I'm not sure it was an issue here. Aren't the nature of those personnel files confidential?
Well, I would say probably Brady and constitutional safeguards, number one, trump any potential confidentiality issues. I would say number two.
What do you have to support that?
I'm sorry.
What law do you have to support that? Do you have a citation to something?
I can't cite a specific case. I would just say, in general, that a defendant's due process rights to a fair trial as a general matter.
But don't you have to make some showing of materiality?
I think you have to make some showing of materiality if you are simply seeking disclosure of the personnel records to the defense. I don't think you get them just for asking. But what happened here is the defense said, I would like for the state to review the personnel records. And if there is Brady material in there, if there is something in there that adversely affects this law enforcement witness's credibility, I would like that disclosed. I think also as to the confidentiality issue, of course there could be a protective order. It's done in civil lawsuits all of the time. There could be an attorney's eyes only provision in the confidentiality order to the extent that confidentiality is an issue. I mean, that's a little farther down the road. The first question would be...
Well, and I don't want you to chew up your time. You answered my question.
Okay.
It wasn't an issue in the case.
Well, that's, you know, I have 13, 12...
No, I'm going to give you 3 minutes rebuttal. So go ahead and sit down. And, Ms. Lucic, you have 18 minutes. You don't have to use the 18 minutes, but certainly you have the right to 18 minutes. And, Mr. Brown, you have three full minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Lisa Luzich, and I represent the state of Nevada. And I would point out to this court that the Supreme Court has, U.S. Supreme Court, has repeatedly said that there is no general constitutional right to discovery, and Brady did not grant one. Discovery is statutory. And in fact, what Brady held was that if there is suppression of evidence by the prosecution and that evidence is favorable to the defense, then there is a due process violation if the evidence was material to guilt or punishment. In this particular case, they made a broad, go search out any exculpatory evidence for us. And the state, they misrepresent what happened in the lower court. The state didn't say, no, we're not going to search for anything. What the state said was, what do you want us to do? Call every single police officer in every agency in Clark County? That is just not feasible. What the state did, and what I assume the state does in all of our criminal cases, is we search out all of Metro's databases. We have access to, for example, OnBase. We have access to Premier One. We search out those databases for anything that we can find, and whatever we find that is material, we turn over, as we did in this case. They could have said to us, we believe there's a chance that your witness on a prior occasion lied, something like that. Or we think that your police officer in another case, you know, didn't do what he was supposed to do or lied to a superior officer. Give us some indication of what you're looking for, and we are happy to search that out. But
I have a question. I thought that the district attorney down below had said, what we do is we ask Metro if there's any sustained complaints for fabrication or sustained findings of fabrication. And if there are, we'll give them to you. Of course, if there are, I'd be really surprised if the person is on the force still. So that it seemed like a very narrow inquiry, at least. I don't know what the practice is, but at least per this record, what the prosecutor suggested they would do to fulfill that kind of self-executing affirmative obligation to look for it.
As it pertains to the law enforcement officer personnel records, that is what we do. I mean, we call it a Brady request. We send a request to whatever agency we are trying a case pertaining to, and we list every single police officer, crime scene analyst, anybody that works for Metro, and we do. We ask for any sustained truthfulness violations. Because that credibility is an issue, absolutely. And as Justice Perigieri pointed out, the police officers have rights of confidentiality. I think that if they have a sustained truthfulness violation, that does trump their right of confidentiality, and it is material to the defense. Shockingly, there are occasions where there are sustained truthfulness violations, and they are still on the force.
But why is it limited to sustained violations? Why not the complaints itself, or even, let's say, in the rubric of excessive force complaints, if it were relevant? Obviously, it's a different category than in this case.
Because People every single day get irritated with police officers and make complaints about police officers, and I would say way more often than not, they are found not to be true. So, for example, if Officer Smith irritated, you know, seven people last night and seven people today make complaints about him that are just completely untrue, why should the defense be able to get their hands on that and then ask Officer Smith about it in a capital murder case next year? That's why we ask for sustained truthfulness violations. Every single complaint that gets reported to Metro, it is my understanding, gets investigated. And it is my understanding that way more often than not, they are not found to be truthful. They are not sustained. And if they're not sustained, what value is it at all? So why should we have to turn it over?
Who in this scheme, who determines whether it's sustained or not?
Metro does.
Okay.
It is my understanding that Internal Affairs it investigates all of the complaints that come in, and they do huge investigations. And it's not only one person who sustains or doesn't sustain. The one person who does the investigation makes a recommendation to whether it's a board, a committee. I don't know the terminology, but whoever the fact-finding board or committee is makes their determination. And that's the information that's provided to us. But as I indicated, you know, if we're in a capital murder case and the investigating homicide detective, obviously his credibility is very important, both to the defense and the state. And if there are completely baseless allegations made against him, why should the defense be able to bring that up in court and try to impugn his credibility that way? That's not a fair trial for the state or the defense.
What's the office's position, your office's position, though, if somebody subpoenas particular evidence in Metro and Metro says no? What do you do as the prosecutor?
If the defense sends a subpoena, and they do this a lot, they send a subpoena over to Metro. Metro says something to the effect of there's a pending criminal case, contact the prosecutor. Then they contact us, and I believe our policy, at least what I do, is I get it for them, unless it's something that I think that they are not entitled to, and then I indicate, I don't think you're entitled to that, file a motion with the court so that I can respond, and then we can litigate it. And then if the court tells me that they're entitled to it, then I would turn it over. But we're not in the business of trying to hide evidence. That's just not what we do. And in this particular case, there is not one piece of evidence, there is not one statement, there is not one anything that they can point to, that the defense, the appellant, can point to that was suppressed and that they would have been entitled to. This was a case of overwhelming evidence. And we did go into Metro's databases, we did obtain everything that was there, and we did turn everything over to the defense. They came, they looked through our file. There was not one thing in our file that they did not have.
Do you have is there an institutional policy in the way that the prosecutor's office deals with Brady vis-a-vis the police department or access to files? So is there a way that everybody deals with it, or does each individual prosecutor execute those duties in the way they see fit?
I assume that every, you know, I haven't been on track in almost 20 years, so I assume everybody does it the same way. You know, we have meetings and we talk about the things that we are supposed to do, that we have to do, things that we shouldn't do, things that we shouldn't turn over.
Well, for instance, like in running in witnesses that you have, you run criminal history of witnesses. I mean, that's kind of a pretty fair, if the prosecution's calling a witness, they probably run the criminal history of that witness.
Personally, I do. I think that some people, if they believe there is a reason to think that a witness has some kind of criminal history, they will run, like, we'll run scope of everybody, but NCIC, because of the contract that we have, we're not supposed to use it just willy-nilly. So I'm sure there are people who they won't run it unless they have a reason to believe that somebody has a felony conviction out of state or something that pertains to truthfulness, just NCIC. But I believe everybody runs a scope on all of the witnesses.
Including police officers?
I'm sorry?
Including police officers?
I can honestly say that I don't generally run something on current police officers, because if they have a felony conviction, they can no longer be police officers.
Or if they have a misdemeanor for moral turpitude or arrests or different other things that might fall into the category that might be revealed in an inquiry, but not necessarily felony.
I believe that if a police officer has that kind of misdemeanor conviction, it would be notated in the Brady request that we do, because there would be an investigation before there's an actual prosecution and conviction.
Now, did the prosecutors still get the Metro file? In other words, the Metro police file, when you're prosecuting a case, like, they have a file.
They don't any longer.
That's
Homicide is the only division that still keeps actual binders. None of the other divisions that I'm aware of keep actual physical files, because everybody's trying to be paperless, which is why I say everything that I'm aware of from Metro is exists in those two databases, the premier one, which is the incident crime reports, and then on base, that's pretty much everything else, including photos.
Yeah, old public defenders never die. They just become justices of the Supreme Court.
Yes, sir.
And in the old days, the days of what they call the Davids, David Schwartz, David Roger, David Wall, and as special public defender, we used to go to Metro and look at bay files. So now you don't have to do that anymore. Everything's on a database. But does somebody like Mr. Brown have access to any of that? Or he has to count on you looking at the database? I mean, we used to actually look at a file.
He would have to, well, other than the homicide files, and we still do viewings of the homicide files with the defense attorney. In fact, I did one last week with two public defenders.
So the David issue is still alive and well in Clark County?
When it pertains to homicide, yes. Okay. But as far as the other crimes, no, the defense would have to rely on us to obtain it from the databases and share it with them.
So everything in the sexual assault arena of this particular kidnapping, et cetera, is on the database?
Everything.
So, and I'm sorry, obviously you can tell by our questions in some way, you're trying to just figure out how this works.
The process works.
How it works practically. If you, obviously it's a statewide issue, not necessarily the facts of this case, but this issue of how prosecutors approach it. If you were to suggest a rule on how prosecutors statewide should be approaching their obligations as it relates to police personnel files or requests for misconduct, what would you suggest?
I think that what we do for police personnel misconduct issues is the appropriate way to handle it, because as I indicated, every incident is investigated by a division in the police department, whether it's Metro, Henderson Police, North Las Vegas. Every complaint is investigated, and they're the ones that are going to have the results of those investigations. And when we are set for trial, we send a request over to all, not just Metro, to all of the investigative agencies asking for any sustained violations. And I think that it's got to be the sustained violations, not just the complaints. Because of what I explained, there are so many complaints that have no merit to them. And I don't think that the defense is entitled to that. So I think that the way we do it is the appropriate way. And I would suggest that the other agencies, the other DA's offices in the state do it as well.
Is there any particular state's approach that you think ours is fine? Or is there any other particular state's approach that you think would be helpful here?
I'm not aware of any other states' approaches, I'm sorry, don't have a better answer for you there. But justices, in this case, as I indicated, that there was overwhelming evidence of guilt. There was nothing out there that was exculpatory. They didn't even give us any indication that there could be something out there that was exculpatory. And contrary to what appellant counsel indicated, the request that they made was not that specific. It was extraordinary general. It was disclosure of the personnel files of all law enforcement witnesses it intends to call to trial, which reveals any evidence of or any acts of dishonesty, perjury, or any information that could cast doubt upon their credibility, including but not limited to records pertaining to an disciplinary or internal affairs investigation and records pertaining to performance evaluations. What they were asking for was literally every single piece of paper in every single personnel file for every single law enforcement officer that we were going to call at trial. They also asked for disclosures of any and all judicial determinations that law enforcement witnesses involved in the investigation of this case, et cetera, et cetera. That's something they could have determined themselves. But still, they're asking us to do it for them. The Supreme Court of the United States, this court, nobody has said that the state of Nevada has to do all of their investigation for them. The police do the investigation. We do a little bit of our own. We give them what we have. But it is incumbent upon the defense to do their own investigation as well so that they are prepared for trial. We did what we were required to do, and there is no reason to find any discovery violation in this case because there was no discovery violation.
What I'm concerned about and what Chief Justice Douglas is concerned about, what the commission is concerned about, which of course does have prosecutors and judges and justices involved and defense attorneys, is if Metro is subpoenaed and they don't honor a subpoena. You know, we've invited the Public Defender's Office and criminal defense attorneys to file pretrial writs, and that's the message I hope you take back to the your office, especially that you got to be real careful that Brady material is not being withheld by the Metro. And I know you guys do the best you can, but you got to do better because otherwise Phil gets real upset, and I don't want him to get upset over this issue. I want to resolve this issue, like Justice David said, statewide, so everybody knows what the rules are with law enforcement, and law enforcement knows the rules. But I understand where you're coming from on this one.
I agree that it should be resolved statewide, but I believe it is also your committee that should resolve it, not this particular criminal case.
Well, I just wanted everybody to know where we are, that this is something we haven't been sitting on our hands on. We've had a number of meetings, and we're trying to come up with a solution so that we protect everybody's rights of a person accused of a crime, the rights of a district attorney, and the rights of Metro and law enforcement.
Ms. Lozach, in this particular case, this was not a case that where police testimony was central. Is that correct?
I agree.
Okay.
So
anything further, Justice Berger?
No.
Thank you, Ms. Lozach. Mr. Green?
Thank you.
Mr. Brown, excuse me. Mr. Green, this is the first case. Mr. Brown, you have 3 minutes. I know we raised some issues, so have at us.
If I seem a little unsteady up here, it's because the record is shifting beneath me. I learned for the very first time in oral arguments that apparently, number one, there is a central database where all law enforcement information is located except in homicides. That's not in the record. Number two, I learned that pretrial, the state, searched that database. I don't know what search queries were used, who did the searching, or what the results of that search was. But that is the second thing that I learned for the very first time at oral arguments. None of that is in the record. If it were as easy as searching a database to comply with the duty of inquiry under Kyle's, then the state would not have scoffed and bristled at the request that it do so. When the defense asked that the state inquire if law enforcement had any exculpatory material, the state's response was, I mean, what am I supposed to do? Call every police officer at Metro and say, hey, have you ever met Pasquale Murray? Do you have any exculpatory information about him? That's completely out of place. If the answer was as simple as searching a database, the response would have been, no problem, there is a database where all of this information is housed in a searchable manner, and we will comply with our duty of inquiry by searching that database. That is absolutely not what was said, and I'm learning for the first time, again, that that's what happened.
Well, and I'm not sure that was exactly what the point was. Specifically with personnel files, I'm not sure they're on a database and searchable. They're confidential. And a lot of the material that you're seeking, that you would be seeking, would be contained in those personnel files, right?
It would only be material and personnel files that bears on credibility.
Which would be a sustainable complaint.
It would include, you know, based on the cases that we've cited, honesty violations that were not sustained, It would include, for example, with respect to CSAs, incompetence evidence handling. It would include, for example, the fact that an investigating detective might have had a relationship with a complaining witness. That may not be the case here, but that would clearly be outside the scope of a sustained truthfulness violation, but it would clearly go to an officer's credibility.
But again, going back to that point that you just made, that would be contained in a personnel file that wouldn't be on a database that was readily searchable.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
All right.
Oh, yeah. My understanding is that with respect to the Kyle's inquiry, my understanding is the state is now saying that we made the appropriate inquiry, and we did it through searching this database. Just real quickly, as to the idea that the personnel records request was overbroad, it was not. It was specifically limited to information that reveals evidence of any acts of dishonesty, perjury, or any information that could cast doubt upon their credibility. So it was not a broad request for everything in the personnel file, just information adversely affecting credibility. Thank you very much.
Well, Mr. Brown, thank you for your argument. Ms. Lucius, thank you for your argument. Thank you for your briefs in this matter. This matter will stand submitted.